This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham, Scott German. We're going to break down Virginia's 59-49 win over Wake Forest, a game that was much tighter than that final score might indicate. Virginia led by only one with at the under eight timeout. A little bit of a run, a couple three-pointers. Devin Hall and DeAndre Hunter was a couple of big threes. DeAndre Hunter coming up big in the second half for this Virginia team and makes it look like a nicer win than maybe it than it certainly felt like for most of this game. But Scott, hey, you know, Virginia shoots 40% from the field and wins by 10 on the road. You can't overlook that. That's still pretty nice for a program to be able to do that.
Exactly. I think that kind of summarizes where the team is that they can go out on the road in somewhat of a hostile environment. I wouldn't say that was Cameron-like hostile environment, but certainly it is a road game, and when you can go out and certainly not play your A game, I don't think there's anybody that would say that this was not a B performance. This probably at best was a C or even a C-minus level performance for Virginia, and they come away with a 10-point win. So that kind of summarizes where the program is right now. You can go out on the road in the ACC, play a far less than at your best, far less, and still win by 10 points. I don't think you really need to be apologizing for that.
Yeah, I mean, Virginia led this game with about 9:30 to go first half, led by 17-10, but only scored 5 points the rest of that half. 9:29 of the first half, according to my little stat sheet here, that Virginia scored 5 points. Wake went on a 14-5 run. If you can call that a run, it's more like a 14-5 crawl. But the effect was Wake leading 24-22 at the break. And then early second half, after a Kyle Guy three, Wake scores six straight. They led by five. Now, Virginia then went on an extended run over about a seven-minute period. Virginia went on a run that it was a 15-4 run that gave Virginia a six-point lead. But then over the next 3 minutes, Wake, you know, this they were hanging around. They got it down to one at that under-eight timeout before Virginia was able to get some breathing room and really not able to put it away until that last couple of minutes, making six of six free throws down the stretch. But, yeah, not A game, not B game, not C game. I agree with you, Scott. C-minus game might be the way you put this, at least offensively. But it's one of those things we like to talk about, Scott. No matter what you do as a team, you know, in Virginia in this game, it really shows defense travels. Offense doesn't always travel, but defense does travel. Virginia holds a Wake Forest team that can put points on the board, score 75 points a game coming in, 49 points on their home floor. And so, yeah, even if the shots aren't falling, which for the majority of the night, Virginia was not able to get the shots to fall, they were able to do what they always do, which is play good defense and sort of will themselves to victory with their effort on the defensive end.
Yeah, and we, you know, again, we've been maybe beating a dead horse again, but we keep talking about one of these games, one of these nights, things are going to not go UVA's way. They're going to shoot poorly. They're going to have too many turnovers. Opposing coach is going to have somewhat of a defensive scheme, and they're going to lose. But so far, that hasn't come to play yet. We've been able to avoid those missteps. And here's another interesting fact, if you want to go a little further. We won an ACC road game by 10 points, when three of our starters were combined 4 of 19 from the field. That's 1 of 7 from Jerome, 1 of 6 from Isaiah Wilkins, 2 of 6 from Devon, Devin Hall, and you know, we still come away with a 10-point win. Those guys aren't going to shoot that poorly every night. So, you know, I'm feeling pretty good about this. I know I would have liked to have seen a 30-point blowout win. We put it away in the first half, but that's not the way this conference plays out on a night in, night out basis. It just doesn't happen. It would be nice if it did. It did happen Thursday night down in Georgia Tech. We didn't play an A-level game there, but we kind of had that game in control from the opening tip. But I'm not really going to lose a lot of sleep over this. This is a game that could have been one of those games that we could have slipped up, but we didn't.
Yeah, you know, and you talked about the starters and their productivity. You know, even Kyle Guy, who had a game high 17 for Virginia, he sat out a long stretch in the second half. I don't know if you noticed that, Scott. I looked up and I'm gonna click on his stats here. We got the great in game stats that we have access to a lot. He subbed out. Let's see. He subbed out at the 7:57 mark when it was a 1-point game. Didn't sub back in until 1:36 to go. So, you know, I didn't realize it was that long, but over 6 minutes. And that was where Virginia made the game-winning run. And so, and that was with Nigel Hunter in the lineup. Nigel Johnson in the lineup. Hunter, we'll talk about Hunter in a second. Nigel Johnson played 22 minutes off the bench tonight. 6 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 turnover. But he was the guy on the floor in place of Kyle Guy for that long, long stretch of time when Virginia had a 1-point lead and made it a double-digit lead. So, you know, that again goes to show, and of course, Guy ends up being your leading scorer on the night. DeAndre Hunter once again comes up huge for this Virginia team. It's almost like we're playing a broken record when we talk about DeAndre Hunter. But tonight, 16 points, 7 of 11 from the field, 2 of 2 from 3, 5 rebounds, 22 minutes. At some point, he's got to get more minutes than 22 in a game. But he had a couple threes in that stretch where Virginia, put that distance between themselves and Wake Forest. And he had a nice tip in at one stretch when the game got close. I mean, DeAndre Hunter once again, and he had some nice post moves. So, gosh, I mean, that kid, we say it over and over and over after every game, it seems like, Scott. But that kid is the difference maker on this team right now with what he's able to do both on the perimeter, in the post, and then defensively. He's the real deal.
He is, and you're right. You know, 20, he played barely. Just think of this. Think of it this way. He played barely over half of the game. 22 minutes. He had 16 points. I mean, the question does beg: how do you get him more minutes? At whose expense? Is it that gives Hunter his minutes? Is it Wilkins? Is it Hall? Is it Salt? I mean, really, it's nice to say he needs more minutes, but with most of these other players playing pretty consistent, that's a tough question for Tony. How do you get him more minutes unless you just start him from the very get-go? And then again, who you set?
Yeah, and I look at that, and as you're talking, Scott, I mean, you know, as soon as I said the words, I start thinking the same thing. You know, what do you do? I mean, you know, and the rotation for this team is rather set. You know, and Jack Salt tonight got 19 minutes, 2 points, the 4 rebounds, good defense as he always does. I think the minutes are right now coming at the expense of Mamadi Diakite, who only got 8 minutes tonight, and I don't know that Hunter probably does start for this team just because he doesn't replace Isaiah Wilkins, who is the top-rated defensive player in America. And he they don't come at the expense of Devin Hall, who's the best perimeter defender in the ACC and scored 12 points tonight despite only going 2 of 6 from the floor. So if they don't come at those guys' expense, I don't know that you want to take them out of Jack Salt's pocket, even if if Salt only plays 12, 15, 19 minutes in a game. You know, those minutes are usually against, a big player. Tonight it was Darrell Moore. And Darrell Moore, I'm looking at his stats real quick. The big guy for Wake, who shoots 70% from the field, had 9 points. Now, he had 13 rebounds in 27 minutes, but just 9 points. And if you make it, if you use Salt to make it harder on their big guy to score, then you spell Salt with Hunter, and you go, it's kind of like you're going four guard when you put Hunter in there, even though Hunter can play the post well. The best lineup. Let me use the Golden State Warriors terminology. They call their best lineup their death lineup, the lineup you want on the floor at the end of a game when you're trying to win a game. You know, and they've got Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant and probably Sean Livingston out there. Virginia's best lineup, whether it's a starting lineup or not, the best lineup is going to be Hall, Guy, Jerome, Wilkins, and Hunter. And whether they start or whether they finish, you know, that's the lineup that's going to get you the best results. And so, you know, that's probably the way this plays this year. I mean, unless Virginia plays a team that starts four guards and Salt will be completely out of his element even from the opening tip, I think Hunter probably gets 20, 25 minutes a night and does what he does for this team the way that Tony's been using him right now. But that doesn't mean he can't be as effective. And tonight, obviously, very effective once again.
Yeah, and it may be that that's not a problem. I mean, if he's that efficient in 22 minutes, then that lineup is very productive when he's out there. He don't suffer anything on the defensive end of the floor, that's for sure. He plays the fact that he, I think, I'm not sure you'd agree, I think he plays a lot bigger than he is.
Yeah.
Maybe you do go to a little smaller lineup on occasions and Salt is the guy that sets for a while longer.
Yeah, yeah. And I think when you start, and not thinking too far ahead to next year, because there's a lot of big basketball to be played this year, but this year's team loses Devin Hall and Isaiah Wilkins. And obviously next year, assuming lots of stuff, Hunter comes back, he probably replaces Hall, and he plays in the backcourt. But he's a big 6, like you said, he plays bigger than 6'7", but he brings the ball up the court. He can create shots, from the perimeter, either dribble drive or jump shooting or whatever else. He can score in the post. But I think he probably is more like, offensively, he's probably more a Devin Hall. And then maybe you use Diakite at the four. And that's your very athletic lineup. But I think, so thinking that, thinking backwards now to this year's team, you can't replace, you can't take either Hall or Wilkins out of the lineup, obviously, for long stretches. Tonight, Hall got 36 minutes, Wilkins got 31 minutes. Hunter's 22. Again, they probably came. I mean, if you add up Hunter and Salt, Salt got 19, Hunter got 22. That's 41 minutes at that position, if you want to call it that. Diakite just got 8 minutes. And so, Wilkins getting 31. So, I'll add those up real quick. 31, 19 is 50, 72, 80. That's actually your front court right there. Is Wilkins, Salt, Hunter, and Diakite. Obviously, Hunter's good minutes are taken away from Salt and Diakite. Probably more Diakite right now because, Salt probably averages around 20, 21 minutes a game as it is, even as a starter. But that said, going into the season, Scott, we didn't think about Hunter being a guard. We thought about him being being a forward. We thought about him being a guard on this team and taking minutes away more from Hall and Guy and Jerome. And so what that does is it puts another ball handler on the floor. He was 2 of 2 from three-point range. A guy who can score in the post and defend all 5 positions. That's probably why this team is number 2 in the country right now, is because they have the lineup flexibility that the emergence of DeAndre Hunter's given them right now.
Yeah, and just looking at this, kind of reflecting a little bit, looking at this stat sheet, the final stats, hearing Tony a week or so ago talk about how well Hunter dealt with redshirting last year and how hard he worked, I would bet that the only group of people that are really worried about his playing time are you and I and all the other UVA fans. I would say that Hunter is just too glad to be on the floor, getting quality minutes, contributing, and Tony. If Tony thinks he needs to play another 5-6 minutes, I'm sure Tony will figure a way to get it out. But get him up to that. But I don't see that being really anything that's going to affect him at all. I think he's bought into this team, this chemistry of this team, and he's just glad to be out there. Pretty much now, I guess the sixth man. First player off the bench for the most part.
Yeah, and Virginia fans might remember, the recent run of success dating back to 2013-2014. On that 2013-2014 team, there was a sophomore on that team named Justin Anderson, who would leave school after his junior year to go to the NBA. But as a sophomore, Justin Anderson was the ACC sixth man of the year. And so And there's a reason that team was 16-2 in the ACC, won the regular season title, won the ACC tournament, got to the Sweet 16. It was because they had the kind of depth on that team that put a guy like Justin Anderson on the bench at the start of the game, and he got about 25 minutes a game for that Virginia team. I think there's probably a parallel between Anderson in 2013-2014 and Hunter here in 2017-2018. Hunter is a very talented player, just like Anderson was, probably just like Anderson on that team. Hunter's probably the most athletic player on this team. And yet, yeah, you know, you can use him more effectively just the way Tony's using him. And you're right, Scott, yeah, the only people worrying about his minutes are us. You know, even during the broadcast tonight, the broadcast crew on ESPNU was talking about how Jay Huff is, you know, kind of recreating all the angst we had over Jay Huff, us and the fan base, back in November and December. Why doesn't Jay get more minutes? And Corey Alexander actually hit the nail on the head, which is, you know, he's not playing defense well enough yet to earn those minutes. And, you know, there's talent, and but talent, you know, needs to be used in the right ways. And right now, it's hard to argue that Tony is right now, what, 18 and 1, I guess, at this stage. 18-1, 7-0 in the ACC, and a game and a half up on the field right now. With three games of those being road games now. I don't want to hear any more of this talk about how Virginia had four of their first five at home. Now we've played seven, three of them on the road, four of them at home. So things are evening out, certainly in that respect. But, yeah, Tony's got this team that was not ranked in the preseason, number two in the country with all those numbers ahead of them. He's managing this as well as it can possibly be managed at this stage. I don't think you can do a better job than what he's doing right now.
No, he's if he's not the midway point ACC coach of the year, then there should be some serious investigating going on that. He's done a phenomenal job. You know, if I can step away a little bit from the game somewhat, and a couple of things that I wondered if anyone else is thinking about or reflecting back on two things. One, this is just my observation. I've known Corey Alexander since he was a young 7-year-old. Considered him a very good friend, but I'm getting awful tired of hearing Corey call UVA again. I just don't think he's doing a real good job. Like, whether he's just trying to not be a homer or whatever, but tonight was a little, to me, just my opinion. I'll be interested to maybe read the message board to see if there's anyone else picked that up. Chris, do you not get any sense from listening to him when he covers UVA games? I'm not able to put my finger on it. I don't know what it is that's kind of irritating me about it, but there's something about it, and I don't know. Maybe you can help me figure out what it is that's irritating.
Well, it's the column I wrote. I didn't mention the name of the announcer, but it was Corey. In the media room last week, last Sunday, the NC State game in Charlottesville, talking about how this team isn't talented, and now that's seeping out into his broadcasting. I mean, that was I had not heard him say that on the air, but now he's talking about that openly on the air. How this team is not talented. There's no talent on this team, and repeating that. And ESPN even put a graphic up after he made that claim three or four different times tonight, going into the 2016 class that had four top 100 recruits. You know, no talent? I mean, you know, and he still insists that 2013-2014 team had more talent. We know now that Joe Harris and Malcolm Brogdon and Justin Anderson are NBA players. We didn't know then that they were NBA players. And so, you know, to say that there's nobody on this team that's going to play in the NBA, hey, Corey, newsflash, you didn't have a great career in the NBA, okay? Let's just put it that way. We love you. You're a UVA guy. You got a degree hanging on your wall just like I do and like a lot of the listeners out there do. But you didn't have the career that a lot of folks thought you had. You're not quite as good as you think you were. And, you know, let's just put it that way. I mean, and your team's at Virginia underachieved. And so if you don't like that and you don't like the fact that these guys are playing well, I wish I was like you, Scott. 2 minutes into this game, I almost wanted to turn the volume down. I did not want to hear Corey anymore. And I'm quite tired of hearing him. I'll be glad that Tuesday night we're going to both be in Charlottesville and we don't have to hear the announcers because – I've had enough of Corey downing the talent of this team. This team is the most talented team from a rotational standpoint that Tony's had, and he's playing it well. But you know the Corey Alexanders and Dan Bonners just need to move on from trying so hard to be quote unquote objective that they down Virginia every chance they get. This is a legitimate number two team in the country. They play like it. They deserve that. And I think Virginia fans and I think ACC fans deserve to hear people who are unbiased talking about this team.
Well, and I agree. And as we were, as I was listening to you, I was jumping back on the Saber message board, and lo and behold, there must be, I feel vindicated, there's a ton of threads. And evidently there was something, conversation between Coach Bennett and Corey after the game. So I'm kind of interested to see where that goes, but there's Bennett, Coach Bennett's comments were posted on posted on the ESPN website. So, here's the thought: if he has to try that hard to show his non-bias towards UVA, why not just not assign him to UVA games? I mean, there's plenty of announcers out there. I'm talking to one that would be more than capable of doing these games. If he's really struggling that difficult, is having that difficult of a time to go out of his way to make it clear to everyone he's non-biased towards UVA, then there's tons of other announcers out there you could assign to cover UVA games. This is about the fourth or fifth game that I know of this year that he's been assigned to covering to doing Virginia games. So just put him somewhere else.
Yeah, as a Waynesboro guy, like you said, Scott, you've known him since he was a little kid. I've known him for a long time too. As a Waynesboro guy, I'm glad there's a Waynesboro guy that's doing ACC basketball. I know he started with the UVA radio broadcast, and he probably does try really hard to balance things out. But I'm not sure he's balancing things out here. I really feel like, I don't know, maybe there's jealousy. I mean, because those UVA teams that he was – I mean, he and Jason Williford and Jason and Junior Burrow and Harold Dean and those guys were that heralded recruiting class. They got to, a Sweet 16, I think, once, that group. Corey didn't have the career at UVA that he wanted to because he had those two unfortunate injuries that ended his seasons early. His NBA career didn't pan out. He was a first-round pick, and it just didn't play out like he thought. But man, oh, man, he just seems to hate Virginia. And he hates – it seems like he really hates doing these games. I mean, I think – I don't know. I mean, it makes me wonder if Tony Bennett – and I'll be interested, like you, Scott, you're alluding to something on the message board. I'll have to go look at that later. It just makes me wonder if Tony Bennett may have said something to him. And, of course, I can't imagine what Tony Bennett, one of the nicer guys in the world that we've ever met, could have said to anybody that would make them have this deep-seated grudge. But it almost seems like there's something personal there on Corey's part. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying that. I'm throwing it out there. I'll probably get ripped for saying that, and that's fine. But it is glaringly obvious at this stage that this isn't analysis from Corey Alexander. There's something more to it. I don't know what that might be.
Well, we'll find out. The other little observation I wanted. We know what happened at the end of the Carolina game. Roy Williams basically called the dogs off with a little over a minute left. Was it maybe more than that?
Yeah.
Just told them not to foul. Manny did the same thing tonight. Do you find that unusual?
Well, actually, he did foul up until about the 30-second mark. Virginia went 6 of 6 from the line from the 117 mark to about the 30-second mark. When Wake missed that shot down 10, about 28 seconds left, he called the dogs off. So Virginia ran the clock out from there. when Williams did it, and of course, the game after Carolina called their dogs off, Syracuse did not call the dogs off. And they were down 12, I want to say. It was 12 points with about a minute and 20 to go, something like that. And of course, we know that Syracuse got it down to 5 a couple times. And it was very uncomfortable in JPJ.
That's what I was alluding to. Did Manny not watch that game? I mean, and hey, this is another thing. This is the same floor that UVA wiped out a 10 or 12 point lead in the last whatever that became one of the most improbable comebacks. In fact, it caused the Harvard mathematicians to have to throw out their win projection theory because of what happened in that final sequence of the late game a couple of years ago. And having watched Syracuse knock a bunch of points off the Virginia Land in the waning seconds, I'm just like, why are these coaches just waving the white flag?
Well, tonight it was different because Manning did foul. They fouled Virginia and put Virginia on the line three times for one and ones. Virginia made both ends three times. And then after Wake, that put the lead up to 10. When Wake missed that shot with about 30 seconds to go, that's when he called the dogs off. 30 seconds is different than a minute. If it's a minute to go, you foul at least one more time, I think. Now, Carolina was down 12 as well when they were down. It was about a minute ago. They were down 12. And I would say this, too. Carolina, Wake, and Syracuse are three different teams in terms of what they can do defensively with pressure to get the ball out of your hands. Syracuse, as we know, Virginia fans listening to this podcast know all too well that at the end of games, Syracuse can employ a full-court press and turn you over and get back in the game quickly. They did that in the Elite Eight 2 years ago. They did that again, obviously, just a couple weeks ago in Charlottesville. Carolina and Wake are not built the same way. There's a little bit of personnel that's involved, but also, again, tonight, and Wake also, when they did put Virginia on the line, who did they put on the line? They put Devin Hall and Kyle Guy on the line. So, there's probably a little bit of, my guys don't even know the right guys to foul. We put the ACC's leading foul shooter, Devin Hall, 92% coming into the game. We put Kyle Guy, high 80% guy, on the foul line. No question they're going to go 6 of 6. But also, again, Wake is not a tempo team. They're not a pressure team. And so I think that's what the difference is. But, again, we're going to play Syracuse again, and if we got a lead late against Syracuse, we know what's going to happen. They're going to pressure us, and we've got to be able to function against that. And you're right. Virginia has not always handled that well. I don't know that Manning waving the white flag tonight was as significant. Even as Roy's situation, Carolina scored what, like 1 point in the last 7 minutes of that game. I think he just wanted to leave. I think he just wanted to go home. Start to bust up. We want to go home. Danny Manning tonight, I think he saw the writing on the wall as well. Whereas Jim Boeheim, he knew it worked 2 years ago, so he gave it a try. It almost worked again this year. I think those were three different situations.
In fact, Roy's comments when he entered the press room, was his opening remarks was, gentlemen, this was just a good old-fashioned butt-kicking. So I agree. I think that's what it is. But, having watched Virginia come back from being down by 10, 11 points in the waning second minute of the game, to see it. It can happen, but I was just a little taken back. It's the second time it's happened in the first half of the season. So I'm looking at the one thing I wanted to tell you or tell the listeners is that we play Clemson Tuesday night. Clemson's currently 5-2, they're half game behind Louisville. It's 5-1. But Clemson's second leading scorer, Dante Granum, is out for the season, tore his ACL in their win Saturday over Notre Dame. So Clemson's hurting.
And I feel terrible for Clemson. Brad Brownell, he's been to one NCAA tournament. He's been close two, maybe three times. There's at least two times since they made the last tournament that they should have gotten bids and didn't get a bid. And then this year they're 5-2 in the ACC. I think they're 16-3 overall. I think that's what they are right now. And so you're at that stage. Even if you play 500 ball the rest of the way, you got 21, 22 wins. You're an NCAA tournament team out of the ACC. And this was, going into the season, a lot of folks said this was a make or break year for Brownell. He's had them so close so many times, but at some point you gotta get in or it's somebody else's turn. And so he has a great start that he has, and then you lose Grantham like that. ACL, he's gone, and that's it. And they were already a pretty thin team in terms of depth. He only went really seven deep, and really I'd call it 6.5 deep with that team. And so you lose Grantham, who's not only a productive guy for them, but a guy who plays a lot of minutes. He's productive offensively. He's a stalwart defensively. That really puts Clemson behind a bunch of eight balls, unfortunately. And we'll have the first chance to see them Tuesday night. It's going to be a different Clemson team than then really it kind of makes it hard to game plan for Tony and the staff, because, you know, they've got to change everything they do, and we'll be the first team they'll kind of do that with. But, yeah, that's I feel bad for Brownell, because he seems like a nice guy. He seems like a guy who really knows how to coach basketball in a difficult environment at Clemson. I just don't know how – well, you know, I'm not talking just about Tuesday night, but for the rest of the season, I don't know how Clemson overcomes losing a guy like Grantham. And then as a guy, myself personally, as a guy who's torn an ACL, man, I feel terrible for Grantham. That's a year that you're set back. So there's a lot of bad stuff there.
His career is over. He's a senior.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe. I'm telling you, this is how I think Clemson overcomes that. They're 16-3 right now, currently 5-2 in the ACC. They, I'm looking at their schedule. After the UVA game, they have a very favorable schedule, if there is such a thing when you're talking about going through the gauntlet of ACC play. But just here, this is what they have ahead of them. They have Georgia Tech at home. They have UNC at home. They go to Wake. They go to Pitt. They have Virginia Tech. They have Georgia Tech again. So there's five. There's wins there, even without him. So you know, hopefully, you know, I agree. I think Brunell is a good coach. I like him. I think he's, you know, done a good job there in a school where basketball is certainly second fiddle. He's done a really good job, so I hope that they can overcome it. I just hope they can't overcome it Tuesday night.
Yeah. Let's give them some growing pains first, and then they can figure it out. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, you know, the ACC. We've seen that. We've seen Notre Dame lose Bonzi Colson. We've seen now Clemson lose Dante Grantham. You know, it was talked about during the broadcast tonight. You know, Virginia is right now 18-1, and things look great. But, you know, there was a team just 3 years ago that started 19-0, and then Virginia loses to Duke in the course of the following game, a win over Louisville. Virginia lost Justin Anderson to a broken pinky, of all things. I mean, it's really literally almost the smallest bone you can break, but a broken pinky on Justin Anderson's shooting hand set that team that was – probably the best poised of any of Tony Bennett's teams, at least until this year, to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. A broken pinky set that Virginia team off. So, I mean, you know, we've seen Clemson's dealing with it, Notre Dame's dealing with it. You know, it's in addition to just the fact you have to play all these ACC games, you have all these road games and tough environments and everything else, you know, you got to stay healthy. And Virginia, fortunately, has stayed pretty healthy this year, and, you know, we'll wish that happens. But, yeah, Clemson's going to be struggling, and Notre Dame struggling right now, and we'll see what else happens with other ACC teams as the year goes on. So, well, I think we've done a pretty good job wrapping this up. So, Virginia again, the final score: Virginia wins 59-49, a tougher than expected win, but you don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Virginia gets the win over Wake Forest. Scott and I will be back together in a couple days. Quick turnaround, Tuesday night in Charlottesville. Clemson comes to town. Two ranked teams will be squaring off. Virginia will be ranked number two. We'll see where Clemson's ranked when the polls come out tomorrow. But I think tip time is 8 o'clock. Scott and I will be there live blogging. We'll do a post-game recap, Facebook Live, everything else. And we'll get you ready for the game as well leading up to it. So for Scott German, Chris Graham signing off. I want to wish everyone a great Sunday night.